attitude. We are going to energize the country.
We need to wake up and smell the coffee.
The independence case is a powerful one.
Another future is possible, but we've got to fight for it.
Order!
Hello and welcome to the Debated Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Will. And in this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Alex Serbiak, a professor of politics at the University of Sussex, to discuss a new piece that he has written for The Spectator, Poll Position. The war is redefining Poland's place in the world on Poland's role in the current conflict that is occurring in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine. Welcome to the podcast, Alex.
Hello, Will. Thanks for inviting me.
It's great to have you on. Now, the first question that I'd like to ask is about Poland's governing party, the Law and Justice Party. Now, they are obviously viewed somewhat differently internally within Poland as they are viewed externally in the rest of the world, in the EU and in the United States. Could you just explain to our listeners what the difference is in terms of how the Law and Justice Party are viewed in Poland as versus how they're viewed in the rest of Europe?
Well, I think the first thing to bear in mind here is that the Polish political scene is also very divided and polarized. There are lots of different views about the Law and Justice Party, and including people who are very strong supporters of it, through to very large numbers of Poles who are opponents of it. I think that within Poland, really, there is the big division really dates back to or is rooted in how people view the process of post-communist transformation, and the main sort of ruling elites, if you like, the most of the governments up till Law and Justice came to power in 2015, really saw Poland as a great success story. The embedding of liberal democracy, a very successful transition to a capitalist market economy, the rooting of Poland in Western international organizations, the EU and NATO. Whereas Law and Justice came to office in 2015 with a very strong critique of the nature of the Polish transition from communism to democracy, and of the elites that emerged from it. The elites' bargain, which ended between the outgoing communist regime and the opposition, which is hailed by the post-communist Polish elites as a kind of model of transition, is seen as having produced a set of elites that's very well entrenched, in some senses almost corrupt, and the processes that and institutions that require far-reaching reform. And together with that, the argument is that although Poland may have done very well economically in terms of macroeconomic growth, there are large numbers of Poles that sort of didn't benefit from this. When you go out, or at least not to the same extent, you go out from the large urban areas to provincial small towns, Poland, then those benefits are much less evenly distributed. And that's really where Law and Justice's base is. And it's also a question of values here as well, I think, because there is the idea that the values that the post-communist ruling elites held, it's kind of liberal values, if you like, and that includes kind of cultural liberalism, also kind of held in contempt the values held by ordinary Poles, which were much more kind of traditional, culturally conservative. So it's about, redistributing the economic gains, I suppose, from transition, but also about redistributing prestige. So obviously Poles are very, very divided on this. A lot of Poles obviously agree with Law and Justice enough to have it elected twice, but also a lot of them disagree about it. So now, in terms of internationally, Law and Justice, in addition to critiquing the nature of the Polish transition domestically, also critique the approach of governments up until 2015 in terms of their international relations. I mean, didn't question the orientation of Poland towards the West. But what it did argue, or does argue, is that the Polish governments up until 2015, when they took power, were insufficiently robust in standing up for Poland's interests, that they paid too much attention to try and locate Poland with what you might call the European mainstream, mm-hmm. the EU political establishment, the major European powers, and at the cost of standing up for Poland's interests in areas where those interests clash with the EU mainstream. So in some ways, that was inevitably going to bring it into conflict with the EU political establishment, a different approach to foreign policy. But also, the other reason why the Law and Justice government has had a problematic relationship with the EU political establishment is because the EU political establishment agrees with the critique that the Polish opposition and the Polish, a lot of the Polish kind of legal establishment, the legal elites, have made of a lot of the reforms, and particularly the judicial reforms that have been introduced by the Law and Justice government. They agree with their critique, which is that these have undermined the rule of law by threatening judicial independence, whereas, of course, Law and Justice completely rejects this and argues that the reforms that it's introducing are absolutely necessary because of the nature of the judiciary and indeed other state institutions, but the judiciary is critical, that that have emerged as a result of what it sees as a flawed transition from communism to democracy.
In terms of the sort of the cultural conservatism that you mentioned there, part of that, of course, is wrapped up in the dominance of the Catholic faith throughout Poland, and particularly in, as you mentioned, the rural areas of the country. I mean, how influential do you think politics and religion are in terms of being intertwined in the minds of many Polish people? Because there does seem to be, at least from an outsider's perspective, a great deal of emphasis on the status of the Catholic Church within Polish sort of conservative circles.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And this is obviously critical to understanding the political situation in Poland and the nature of the Law and Justice Party and of its electorate. I mean, just to give you some perspective, I mean, Poland is, in the context of a secularizing Europe, a very religious country. I mean, you know, something like 90% of Poles identify as Catholics, but really a better indicator is the fact that, you know, something like 40% of Poles still attend Mass at least once a week. So if you want to use that as a kind of a proxy for religiosity, and it's probably quite a useful one, certainly in terms of cultural identification, if not necessarily with agreeing with every element of Catholic teaching, you know, that on a European basis is very high, you know, 40% of Poles attending Mass every week. Similarly, although, you know, they don't agree with the church's teaching on you know, everything, on things like divorce, contraception, Poles are kind of relatively socially conservative on a lot of issues, like sexual morality, for example, the attitudes towards, you know, legal recognition of same-sex couples or abortion. And in particular, Law and Justice's social base in provincial small-town Poland is much more religious than Poles in the bigger cities. And indeed, it's a much older electorate, it's a much less well-off electorate, and the kind of secularizing elements within Poland are people who live in urban areas, the better off, the better educated, and in particular, young people. So it's a very, very important element of its electoral base, but also of its ideology. But I think there's something important to bear in mind here, which is, you know, it's not a simple transmission belt. You know, the church says this, the Law and Justice government says that. Actually, the relationship between the church and Law and Justice is quite complicated for a number of reasons. One is that although most Poles identify as Catholics, and a lot of them are you know, very religious in terms of attending Mass every week. There's also a lot of hostility to the Church's explicit and overt involvement in public life and in politics. So even people who, you know, are quite devout Catholics don't like the idea of the Church as an explicitly political actor. And therefore, what Law and Justice says is that rather than forming a kind of an alliance, if you like, with the Church between the, you know, the throne and the altar, if you want to use that expression, they talk much more about, first of all, how they are informed by Christian values, Catholic values. They talk about the important kind of historical links between Polishness and Catholicism. They talk a lot about, you know, Poland's role as a kind of bulwark for Christianity in a secularizing Europe. And they talk a lot about how, and this is coming back to my earlier point, how they represent people who whose views have been ignored and treated with contempt. So if you like, you know, they will say that the liberal elites who have dominated Polish politics until we came to power treats, you know, ordinary provincial small town Poles as, you know, a kind of basket of deplorables, if you like, to use Hillary Clinton's infamous phrase. Whereas we respect the values of these people. And there's a, I mean, there's a particular phrase that sometimes people use, which is they talk about the redistribution of prestige. And this is in many ways the key to understanding a lot of what the Law and Justice Party is doing. It's partly about, you know, redistributing the gains from economic transition, kind of massive social welfare programs that the party's introduced. And this, incidentally, is another reason why it's cautious about being too religious in its appeal, because some of the people who vote for it primarily because of its economic program. It's left-wing, redistributionist economic program, I hasten to add. But also because it doesn't just redistribute wealth, if you like, it redistributes prestige. And pays due respect, if you like, to, or that this is its pitch, to people who have been ignored, have been marginalized, treated with contempt, because they hold traditional socially conservative views on moral cultural issues, and also are more religious and identify much more with the Church and its teaching and with its values. Mm-hmm.
One point that I think is particularly interesting that has been noted in recent days has, of course, been Poland's reaction to Ukrainian refugees. Poland has admitted more refugees from Ukraine into Poland than any other country at the moment. Now, I mean, how much do you think that is motivated by Poland's historic relationship with Russia, which... not just during the days of the Warsaw Pact and the USSR, but even going further back to the days of the Russian Empire and the partitions of Poland, has been one in which many Polish people have feared Russia. Do you think that that is the primary motivation between the embracing of Ukrainian refugees, or do you think that it's part of a means of Poland demonstrating that it is a very important player in European politics and demonstrating to other nations that both in the EU and outside of it, that it is a major player in European domestic politics?
Well, I think the second factor is one of the benefits that Poland derives from its very positive reaction to the large numbers of Ukrainian refugees that have come. But I wouldn't say that's the motivation. And it's certainly not about the geopolitical, its reaction to the refugee crisis specifically is not driven by historical attitudes towards Russia or geopolitical considerations in that sense. I mean, I think the first thing you identify is very important. And it is very important in terms of shaping. So here we're talking about, you know, historical attitudes towards Russia in terms of shaping Poland's historical memory and the impact that that has on Polish foreign policy and its approach towards Moscow and Russia. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, I mean, historically, it's a very, very problematic relationship. I mean, you know, going back hundreds of years, and this is a lot of it's to do with, you know, Poland's kind of physical geography and its geographical location. I mean, where Poland is located, you know, between Germany and Russia, historically, I mean, it has thrived. I mean, never mind thrived, it's survived, you know, when those two countries have been at odds with each other. And every time that they've combined and had an alliance, it's been very, very problematic for Poland. Indeed, you know, it's been wiped off the map in at the end of the 18th century, and then again during the Second World War. And that's also, as I say, to do with Poland's physical geography, which is, you know, it doesn't have any natural sort of barriers, defences. You know, there are lots of mountains in Poland, but they're all on the south, you know, the border with the Czech Republic and Slovakia, who, you know, have tended not to get into wars with us. So, you know, that those historical factors, you know, as you say, that the period of partition during the end of the 17th century, 18th century, beginning of the 19th century, when, you know, Russia occupies significant parts of Poland. Again, you know, when Poland regained its independence in 1918, the first thing it was engaged in was an existential struggle for its existence against, you know, kind of Soviet Russia. And my granddad fought in that. In the Russo-Polish War, and then again, you know, Russia invaded, or the Soviet Russia again invaded Poland in alliance with Hitler in 1939. As a result of which, you know, my father was deported and sent to Siberia, and then obviously after the Second World War, although, you know, formally an independent state, it was part of the Soviet bloc, Soviet Empire, if you want to use those terms. So, you know, I think those factors are very, very important in terms of, you know, shaping Polish historical memory and shaping the kind of the broad contours of Poland's approach to Eastern policy, if you like, and its relations with Moscow. I don't think they're that significant in terms of Polish reactions to the refugee crisis. I think this is simply, in my view, a basic humanitarian impulse, which is, you know, you've got millions of people, and we are now talking about millions of people, you know, who are fleeing a conflict situation, and we are, you know, the first safe haven for these people. So, you know, it's just a basic kind of humanitarian impulse, really. And Poland, you know, it's got a large land border with Ukraine, and, you know, it's inevitably where a lot of people are going to go. You know, it's a very large country on the border. Incidentally, there's actually a lot of Ukrainians already living in Poland, which, you know, maybe people are not aware of. I think there's at least 1 million Ukrainians who moved to Poland in recent years. I mean, partly, again, you know, these were people who were displaced as a result of the 2014 conflicts with Russia, but most of them are economic migrants. I mean, they're people who've moved to Poland to fill labour shortages that were created as a result of a lot of Poles coming to Britain. I mean, Ukrainians in Poland do the jobs that a lot of Poles in Britain do, in catering, hospitality, you know, on building sites, in some cases in the health service, although there are problems with Ukrainian qualifications sometimes there. So, you know, there are kind of large networks of Ukrainians that already live, I mean, over 1 million people, some estimates are even higher than that, you know, even before this. So, you know, I mean, it's very, very simple. It's a basic kind of humanitarian impulse, which has driven, you know, the Polish government and a lot of ordinary Poles and Polish civil society to embrace, you know, huge numbers of people, the largest migration or refugee movement since the Second World War.
Do you think that as the war continues, and it's been going on, the invasion for about 20 days now, do you think that this is going to drive Poland more towards the European Union or NATO? Or do you think that those people who were suggesting that Poland might be driven more towards the EU and NATO are somewhat underestimating the feelings in Poland in regards to both the EU and NATO?
Well, I think it's worth separating out the EU and NATO here. I mean, there's never any real debate about, you know, whether Poland should be a member of NATO in the way that there was in some of these countries at the time of eastward enlargement. I mean, some of these countries were, you know, much more divided and particularly in terms of public opinion. I mean, in most countries, people did want to join NATO. It was demand-driven, you know, in every country in Eastern Europe that joined NATO. But in Poland, there was really no debate about it at all. I mean, the numbers in favour of, you know, NATO membership were something like, you know, it was over 95% or something like that. So it's not really a question of debate. And I mean, you know, basically every Polish political party, every Polish government has had as a priority strengthening the NATO presence on Poland's within Poland as part of NATO's eastern flank. So, you know, I mean, the Polish dream is permanent American military bases on Polish territory. I mean, the government even tried to sort of appeal to Donald Trump's vanity by saying it, they would call it Fort Trump, you know, if that would help, basically. And you know, whereas at the moment there are rotational troops in the US, they couldn't fight a defensive war. Yeah. They're what's called a tripwire. You know, that's their presence there. So NATO is, there is no question about, you know, the United States has always been seen as the alliance with the United States, which is very, very strong in Poland. And again, there are historical roots to this. Going back, you know, you can go back to the 19th century, to the Polish migration to the United States. You can look at the fact that, you know, the United States, one of Woodrow Wilson's 14 points, number 13, I think it was an independent Poland after the First World War, to the, you know, relationship with, you know, Ronald Reagan, who's absolutely revered in Poland during the Cold War. And now the fact that, you know, the United States is seen or has been seen as, you know, the only serious sort of military actor in the world. You know, if you're in a punch-up, you want the United States there. So, you know, it's kind of completely unquestioned. The relationship with the EU is more complicated, certainly since the Law and Justice government has been in power. I mean, basically, the Law and Justice is sometimes characterised as a Eurosceptic party, including by myself. It's a term that I've used, but I would describe it more as a kind of a soft Eurosceptic party, which is it's a party that's kind of uncomfortable with the trajectory of some aspects of the European project towards more federalization. So they have a kind of a vision of a more kind of intergovernmental, you know, kind of anti-federalist view of the EU. But you know, they don't question Polish EU membership. You know, it's not questioned. I think their approach to the EU is kind of twofold, really. They have a kind of twin track strategy, which is, on the one hand, they accept that there are areas where there are going to be disagreements between the Polish government and the EU political establishment on things like moral cultural issues, for example, where, you know, Poland's view of things like, you know, multiculturalism or abortion or legal recognition of, you know, same-sex relationships is very different. It stands well outside the kind of the West European mainstream, if you like, or certainly the view of the cultural and political elites in Western Europe. It appreciates the fact, or it accepts the fact, it doesn't appreciate it, but it accepts the fact that the EU political establishment agrees with its domestic opponents in its assessment of the rule of law, the judicial reforms, things like that. I mean, it obviously disagrees with that, and it argues its case, but it's come to terms with the fact that, you know, that they take a different view of this. However, its argument is that those disagreements should not stop Poland from cooperating with the EU political establishment on the really important areas and the kind of the day-to-day areas of sort of politics. In that sense, they say, in spite of all of these differences, Poland is a good European, okay? We are a positive and constructive EU member. And their argument would be here that, you know, and the current crisis highlights this because, you know, the current crisis shows what's really important. And, you know, what's really important is the West uniting and coming together and having a very robust response to, you know, Russian aggression, Russian imperialism. And, you know, we're kind of very tough sanctions, you know, isolating the Moscow. And, you know, we've always been, they say, you know, we've always been at the forefront of this. And we're taking, you know, a leading role at the moment. And, you know, Poland is playing an absolutely critical role in terms of the international response to the Russian invasion. So they would say, you know, this is a prime example of how our relations with the EU should work or are working. You know, we distinguish these issues, which, you know, we see as kind of second order in a sense, moral cultural issues, disagreements about the rule of law, from the really important issues, day-to-day cooperation on economic issues, but also, you know, critically on these kind of security issues.
We're coming towards the end of the podcast now. It's been fantastic to have you on, Alex. And I have one final question for you. We have, of course, been discussing Polish politics, but Poland also has a rich cultural and cuisine and has a rich tradition of food and events and paintings and films. So if you could pick one Polish dish or one Polish work of art that is not as well recognised around the world as it should be, and you could make that piece of art or dish better known around the world, what one thing would you pick to make better known?
Now you put me on the spot. So because I'm supposed to be a political scientist, not a cultural historian. So I would say that if you haven't already tried it, I would have some pierogi. Basically, you know, they are fantastic. Mm. And there are lots of different flavors. You've got, and my favorite one is sauerkraut and mushroom. Although a wild mushroom, but you know, there's lots of other ones. There's meat ones. There's what's called Russian pierogi, which they have. Which I don't know whether there's probably some people boycotting those now. They're the ones which you have potatoes, because of course you can't get any meat in Russia. That was always the big joke in Poland. So I would suggest that you try these. You can do worse, really, if you want to kind of understand Poland and where it's come from, than to read up about the life of Pope John Paul II. There have been, you know, a number of films made about him, and there's a really good biography by George Weigel. Not only is, you know, I mean, John Paul II an incredibly important, significant individual in 20th century history, but you know, he's absolutely critical if you want to kind of understand modern Poland, modern Polish history, going back to, you know, the Second World War, the struggle against communism, and then, you know, even if you don't agree with it, you know, some of his critiques of you know, post-communism in the early days. As I say, you don't, even if you don't agree with him, and a lot of people don't, you know, in terms of understanding mentality of a lot of Poles, particularly when you go outside the kind of rural, the you know, built up urban areas. And my advice to anybody who goes to Poland is get outside. I mean, the Polish cities are amazing. You know, you can, the architecture and the history is fantastic. There's even nice bits to Warsaw if you look quite carefully. But my advice is, you know, try and get outside the big urban areas, and, you know, go to small town Poland. You know, look at what Mass is like on a Sunday, you know, in small town Poland, and, you know, you'll get a much, much better feel for it if you really want to understand Poland. You know, I occasionally talk to people from the Foreign Office, the British Foreign Office, and the Polish Embassy, you know, when they're starting, and that's the bit of advice I always give them. You know, a lot of the people you will meet, and the circles you will move in, will be in these kind of, you know, urban, built-up urban areas, which are very, very historical, very interesting. You can get fantastic cuisine there, of course, And you know, that's obviously, you know, key people there. But if you really want to understand Poland, and in particular, if you really want to understand the current government, you know, get out to small town provincial Poland and eat some pierogi.
Well, I think that's a fantastic advert for Poland. So if anybody's listening, wants to go to Poland, I think you could not do worse than follow the advice that you've just given. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast. If people want to find out more about you, about your work at the university, where should they go to find out more about you?
Okay, so I think the first thing, the best thing to do is I have a blog where I try and write about the areas that I'm researching, but in a way that's accessible to non-academic audiences. And it's called, it's got the incredibly original title of The Polish Politics Blog. Okay, and it does exactly what it says on the tin. And I update that roughly once a month, and I try and write about, you know, current events from an academic perspective, but obviously, you know, involves political commentary, which is, you know, accessible to people who are non-specialists and people who are non-academics. And if you like what's on the blog, then, you know, I've got my email address. There's my contact details at Sussex, you know, my homepage, where you can find out, you know, my sort of slightly less easily digestible work that I do in my research. Or, you know, I'm always happy. I always try and respond to emails. You know, if anybody wants to ask me any questions about what's on the blog, or if you want to comment on it, you know, I always do try and respond to comments as well. So I think that's, you know, that, if there's one way into my work, it's the Polish Politics Blog with my name, Alex Strzelbiak. You won't find many Strzelbiaks apart from the basketball player Wally. You know, you'll track me down fairly easily.
Excellent. Thank you once again for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast. If you've enjoyed it, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, Podbeam, and Amazon Music. You can also follow us on Twitter, @DebatedPodcast, like us on Facebook, Debated Podcast, and if you'd like to get in touch with us, whether about appearing on an episode of the podcast or commenting on an episode that you've listened to, you can do so at thedebatedpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. I hope you listen to the next one.